3, 2, 21.
I'm Ben, and I just became a gay uncle.
I'm Tommy, and I've been Ben's gay uncle for 30 years.
Are you ready for a double dose of gay uncle magic? Buckle up.
Ask your gay uncle, 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 ask him all the questions that you have in your brain. Ask your gay uncle, you know that your uncle will do his very best to explain. He'll do his very best to explain.
You thought 2021 was going to be nice and chill, but nope, psych.
Same old shit. Hey, I'm just going to give out a quick piece of advice.
Okay.
Stuff doesn't change. What changes is your relationship to it.
Oh.
There you go.
Yeah.
Bad shit's always going to happen. Good shit's always going to happen. It's always going to be there. There's always going to be somebody overthrowing a government. There's always going to be somebody pooping on your lawn. There's always going to be somebody that you want to smack.
Wait, so how? So, okay, but take this one step further, though, Tommy. How do you change your relationship to shitty stuff that happens?
Well, you know, being almost 60, hey, everybody, my birthday is February 18th. Send me a card. One of the ways it has happened for me is because I'm old or older. I feel like I have sort of a bigger arc of this will pass or it's less important. You know, what's more important is my... Well, I don't know if this is true. I'm sort of nervous about saying this, but
say it.
What's more important is my sense of day-to-day peace as opposed to is the world going to have peace? Because the world's not going to have peace. It's not. It never will. That's just how we are as human beings. You know, a part of what youth is growing and fighting and expanding and exploring.
Yeah.
And then there's the mellowing that happens with age because, you know, I was a part of ACT UP. I was a part of Queer Nation. I was political. I did the protests. I did the demonstrations, etc. And now I'm like, that's not my torch to bear. Other people are doing it. I've got other torches to bear. I also think that the way that we have agency around the difficult things in life that we have less control over is how we respond to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I made a decision. I think this happened about 3 years ago. I made this decision for myself that I would not worry about things that I did not have control over.
Mm.
Because what's the point?
Absolutely. Here's what the Buddhists say around that, that is the ticket to misery. Trying to control things that you don't have control over is the ticket to misery.
Yeah, it really is, because you're setting yourself up for failure.
One way to look at this is that there are two ways to file things. You can either file something in, oh, I can change this, or I can't change this. And I feel the problem occurs when people put things in the wrong file.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found that as I get more clarity around things that I can change, like when I start finding things in the right way, I realize that I actually have less desire to change them.
Mm-hmm.
And if I actually put something in the file of like, oh, fuck, this file is huge, all the things I can't change, then it's like, wow, that's a lot less that I have to do.
Isn't one of the 12 steps in the 12-step program something like accept the things you cannot change and change the things you can or something?
That's the serenity prayer. It is a 12-step thing. It goes, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Mm. And the wisdom is what you're talking about in terms of filing it in which file.
Absolutely. Where to put it?
Where to put it?
I'm just going to say one more, and this was something that totally changed me. I came across this poem from like a Confucius expert, Lao Tzu. And
if he was so confused, you probably shouldn't be listening to his poem.
Did I say confused?
Confucius. No, that was just another dad joke. If he was so Confucius, you probably shouldn't be listening to his poems.
Right. He was confusing me. No, this one is not confusing at all. So it goes. The clouds above us join and separate. The breeze in the courtyard leaves and returns. Life is like that. So why not relax? Who can stop us from celebrating? I just love that.
Who can stop us from celebrating? It's so simple and also active.
Yeah. And the question at the end is so great. It's like, I mean, what was your answer when you heard that, Ben? Who can stop us from celebrating?
What was my answer? Oh,
yeah.
I mean, now that you ask me, I think nobody. But in the moment when I just thought, oh, yeah.
Wow, this is such a Rorschach protest poem. Because when I first read that, I was like, me.
Oh.
I'm the one who stops me from celebrating.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Probably.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's how it is for most people.
That is confusing.
Yeah.
Go ahead and ask your gay uncle.
I just want to say the correct name. Lu Yu is the man who wrote the poem.
Listener questions, listener questions. Ask us your questions.
This is from Stephen in L.A. Smelly, as some people call it. There seems to be an over-sexualization of other men by gay men that we indulge in. For example, Ben likes to post sexy pictures. Oh, why do we do it? When is it too much?
I just got called out by Stephen in L.A. Sure, I do like to take part in that. I find it fun, and I find it very harmless. And also, I've actually decided to take the month of January off Instagram, which is why, if you are on Instagram and you follow us at Ask Your Gay Uncle, you'll see that Jackie has just done a post saying that she's taking over the Instagram account for the month of January.
Yay, Jackie!
Thanks, Jackie. And it's interesting that you say this, Stephen. This is very topical, because the reason I'm taking a break off Instagram is that it felt like it was getting to be too much for me. I felt like I was spending too much time on it. I felt like I was putting too much of my sense of like personal validation into it. And I just needed to take a break.
Yeah. So over-sexualization, Ben. Yeah. Do you feel like there is an over-sexualization within the queer community? I mean, gay community, men and men. Do you think you are a part of that?
Well, I'll answer the first question that you asked first. I personally think that straight men and women like to sexualize each other just as much as gay men like to sexualize each other. But I think the reason we don't see it as often is that it's less acceptable to do so as overtly in the straight community as it is in the gay community.
That's interesting. You know, you get a bunch of gals together and it's like, he's got a hot ass. What do you think of him? You know, that there is that sexualization. I wonder if it's around a public and a private sexualization.
Well, I have a story about this, Tommy. So like 6 years ago or so, it was the first professional theater, maybe it was 7 years ago, the first professional theater job I booked was a parody of 50 Shades of Grey. Yeah. And it was a musical and it was super funny. It was kind of like sketch comedy with a bunch of parody songs. And we toured the country and the audience were almost exclusively middle-aged women. There would be like a light dusting of gay men, but almost every single theater was just a sea of middle-aged women. And I was playing the role of Christian Grey, and it was very sexy. There was like a striptease that I did with this other guy to It's Raining Men, and we like ripped off our trench coats, and we had umbrellas. And I will tell you, when straight women are not around men, the way they behave and the way they sexualize men is just as intense as what gay men do, if not more. Like the jeering, the applauding. At one point I was on stage, I walk in shirtless with like a whip, and the woman who played the narrator like puts her arm on me or something. And this woman in the front of the audience stands up with her beer and says, "Oh, just touch his fucking nipple." Like she had a megaphone. It was louder than anything I've ever heard in my life. So it is bullshit that gay men sexualize each other more than straight people do. When I hang out with my straight buddies, they're dirty as hell. And when I hang out with my straight female friends, they're dirty as hell. It's just not overt and on Instagram because I think culturally in the straight community, it's less acceptable and they don't want to be branded a slut or a player or any of those things.
Hmm.
What do you think?
You know, we're being asked to talk on large, broad stroke terms here.
Yes.
And so with generalizations, there can often be mistakes or generalizations. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think certainly one thing that gay men are known for is having sex and having a lot of sex. And genetically speaking, we are programmed to have sex more often. Our reproductive system as men regenerates every 7 days.
Yeah.
And because it's two men who are together as opposed to a man and a woman, you know, then it's like, okay, we get to spill our seed every 3 days because every 3 to 7 days we're coming up with millions of new sperm.
Yeah. Oh, we're testosterone monsters, that's for sure.
It's in our DNA, right?
It's interesting. I do think that culture plays a lot into this.
Oh, yes.
I have a friend, a straight woman, who was invited to have a threesome with these two straight guys at one point. And she was talking to me about it, being like, should I do it? Should I not? I really want to. And I was like, we'll go for it. Absolutely. And she was so scared that somebody would find out and she'd be branded that threesome girl, that like wild, crazy, overly sexual threesome girl. So she didn't do it, even though she really wanted to.
Right.
And I don't think that kind of social and cultural pressure exists in the gay community.
And if it does, it's way less than it is in the straight community, and certainly amongst females. I totally agree.
Yeah. I mean, even just think about how welcoming the gay community is to the notion of open relationships. But then when you ask someone in the straight community about that, it's like they're appalled. Oftentimes.
Yeah. Eyes bulge out and heart starts beating. And
they can't fathom.
Yeah, they need to go baste the chicken.
I mean, and there's... baste the chicken?
You know, Stephen, around your last question of when is it too much, mm-hmm. I think when it causes harm, it's too much. And mm-hmm. everybody's going to have a different definition of what harm might be.
Mm-hmm. What's yours, Tommy?
Do I feel like I've lost integrity? Am I being able to be honorable in this? Am I minimizing this person by doing that particular action? And if I am, then that doesn't feel good.
Hmm.
There's a difference between objectifying and appreciating. And so I can look at a gorgeous tree and be like, holy cow, you are stunning. And I can look at a gorgeous man and go, holy cow, you are stunning. And then I can look at the tree and go, I'm going to cut you down and build this and build that, and I want this and that from you. And then I can look at that same man and go, I want your dick, or I'm going to fantasize about your ass, or wouldn't it be great if I could just like sidle up next to you and smell you? You know, that to me is taking something from them and objectifying them as opposed to appreciating them. And so if one can go to that place of appreciation and hopefully seeing the beauty in all of who they are, that's great. But sometimes you don't have that opportunity. Sometimes you're just walking down the street and that hot Argentinian walks by you, and believe me,
Argentinians are so beautiful. If you're Argentinian, call me.
Yeah, right? I was in Buenos Aires for 6 weeks and that was heaven.
Lucky.
Yeah.
I love that you're talking about.
But talk about objectification, right? This is what we just did, Ben.
We just totally
did. Right. We just totally did that.
Look at us being part of the problem. I love that you're talking about objectification here, Tommy, because I have realized in the last like year or two that I actually find objectification very sexy. And I think like I like objectifying my partner, and I like being objectified by my partner, depending on the circumstance. And for me, that circumstance is consent. And I think objectification can be awesome and really sexy and a total turn on and mutual as long as both people are on the same page about it and there's consent.
Yes. Yes. I absolutely agree. I was actually on Scruff with some guy who's totally into that. And I was like, okay, I can do that because you're into it. And we agreed.
Yeah, and there's that consent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I was like, you're going to be my cum bucket. You're going to worship my cock, you know. I'm like, you're into it and it's kind of hot. So I was into it.
You're going to be my cum bucket. That is quite the phrase, Tommy.
Are you blushing? You look like you're blushing.
I think I am blushing. I'm not used to hearing my uncle say that phrase. I just looked up objectification. It says, the act of degrading someone to the status of a mere object.
Yeah.
Sexual objectification is the act of treating a person as a mere object of sexual desire, is a subset of objectification, as is self-objectification.
So, Ben, when you put pictures out that are of you in...
On Instagram
that are revealing pictures,
uh-huh.
Are you... I mean, you must know that people are objectifying you.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, putting a picture out like that is objectifying myself.
Right.
But I know that I am a multifaceted, multidimensional person, so I'm okay with one side of me being that.
Right. You know, it's such a great subject because it's around sexualizing oneself.
Yeah.
And there's agency there. And I think the problem with objectifying is that the other person doesn't have the agency. I wonder if... Is one of the ingredients of objectification that it is non-consensual?
I'm going to say no to that.
Well, hold on. Let me finish this, Ben. Because maybe what you enjoy doing and what I enjoy doing and what a lot of people enjoy doing is actually not objectification. That it is sexualizing themselves or becoming a sensuist or sensualist or hedonist or just exalting their body and praising their body.
Sure. I mean, now we're getting into the semantics of it.
It is, but objectification has a negative terminology to it.
Well, but that's because you are trying to reserve it for... right now, you're purposefully trying to reserve the word objectification to negative meanings. And I'm saying objectification can be totally positive as long as both parties have given their consent.
I would say that that's not objectification. I would say that's something else. You're being sexualized. You're being sexualized. What it is that you're being turned into a sexual being. And I think that's hot. I love being a sexual being. I was a fucking stripper. You know, I enjoy...
Yes, you were.
I was. I enjoy praise around my body. I don't have much nowadays.
And why is, to you, why is that not a form of objectifying yourself? Why are you so adamant to define objectification as only negative and try to put a positive spin on, for example, what you were doing as a stripper or, for example, what I do when I post a sexy picture of my abs on Instagram?
Yeah, yeah. You're okay using the word objectification of self. And I just think it's a different word.
What's the word? What's the correct
word? I don't
know. Word?
I don't know. Sensualizing.
Let's put this to our listeners. If you can think of a word for like the positive side of consensual objectification, what would that be?
Yeah. I love that.
Let us know.
Oh my God. That was a huge rabbit hole we went down. Hey, Stephen, thanks for that question. Clearly, you... inspired us.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. And if you happen to know any Argentinians, send them our way.
Hey, it's your friendly neighborhood producer, Jackie. We hope you're enjoying Ask Your Gay Uncle. If you'd like to ask a question for Tommy and Ben to answer on the podcast, leave us a message at 512-981-7332. Or you can email ask@askyourgayuncle.com. You can find us on Instagram at @askyourgayuncle or Twitter at @AYGUpodcast. Thanks for listening. The generation gap, the generation gap,
the generation gap. For our first generation gap in 2021. And I know we said we weren't going to do a theme, but I did my own little theme just because it's 2021 and it's our first generation gap back. So I decided to focus on firsts.
Oh, nice. So I like that, Ben.
Yeah. So number one. Who was the first out lesbian to host the Academy Awards?
Ellen DeGeneres.
Yep, 2007. Bingo.
When I was growing up, what was the groovy way to turn on and turn off a light?
The clapper.
Yeah! Clap on, clap off.
I think I learned that from Austin Powers.
That's, you know, I have to say, that's pre-Siri and Alexa.
That was the OG Siri, huh?
Yeah, it was brilliant.
I guess, what do you do if you do that dance where, like, what is it, the tango, where you, like, you have to, like, clap at the end of a beat?
Flamenco.
Flamenco. The lights were on and off all night.
Yeah, that's actually, in fact, that is how strobe light came around.
That's a lie. That's a lie. You're just trying to Confucius us.
Your turn.
Okay, number two. What was the first cartoon show to dedicate an entire episode to the topic of same-sex marriage?
I could see Pee-wee Herman doing that, but that's not your generation, so I'm not saying it. The first cartoon show, I have no idea.
The Simpsons, in 2005, dedicated an entire episode to the topic of same-sex marriage.
Oh.
This was my only one about cartoons, but if you're into the topic of cartoons, go back and listen to episode 22, Cartoons, Crushes, and Breaking the Friend Zone, where Tommy and I did an entire generation gap just on cartoons.
Yeah, and I think The Simpsons is one of them.
It is.
Okay, what are clackers, and why were they pulled?
Oh, no. Clackers?
You kids, stop pulling on my clackers.
No, okay, hold on, let me
but
guess.
But you were right with kids. Kids
Kids
is
were pulling
right.
on them?
Kids,
Something that you pull on. And it's not something that you would, like, pull at parties or something that, like, makes a bang.
No. Mm-mm. Like, I remember walking to elementary school with my clackers. Like, everybody had them.
Walking to elementary school with your clackers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had clackers. We were walking through school with clackers.
Were they, like, a kind of shoes that, like, made a funky sound when you stepped? like rolly shoes were huge in my generation. You're laughing.
No.
That's not.
Okay. No. You know those, like, paddle ball toys where you whack the ball and it's attached to the paddle?
Yeah.
Imagine that, but it's a ring that has two strings hanging off of it that are maybe 6 inches long, and at the bottom of the strings are plastic polyurethane hard balls, and you move your hand up and down, which then causes the balls to start bouncing, and then they can bounce on the bottom and then swing around and whack up top, so they're doing this whacking back and forth.
Oh.
And they got pulled. Part two of the question: why did they get pulled, Ben?
Pulled?
Yeah, like recalled.
Recalled because they were dangerous. Kids were getting hit in the eye. Some like little Billy Bobby went blind.
Yeah, he was doing the clacker up and down thing and they exploded from the impact and shrapnel like went flying and kids were getting, oh yeah.
Okay, my next question.
In
2008, Matthew Mitchum was the first openly gay Olympic athlete to win an Olympic gold medal. The first. For which sport?
No, Greg Louganis did.
Was Greg Louganis not open?
First open. That's a good question. Okay, well, he's a swimmer. Matthew McConaughey or whoever this guy
Matthew
was.
Matthew Mitchum.
Yes, he's a swimmer.
He, close.
Diver.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he's a diver also. Oh, yeah. All divers are gay.
Well, if you're a diver and you're not gay, please call us. And we'd love to interview you so you can tell Tommy he's wrong.
Yes,
he was a diver.
Right.
The 10-meter dive. He actually got the highest single dive score in Olympic history. And he's from Australia.
Good day, mate.
Good day, mate.
Okay, my turn.
Yeah.
This has been rated as the most successful lineup of TV shows ever.
Huh.
It was when I was growing up. It was the lineup of these four shows on a Saturday night.
And I'm supposed to name the four shows?
Five shows.
Supposed to name all
if you,
five.
If you can name two of them, then that'd be great, Ben.
I Love Lucy. No, that was before your time. MASH.
MASH is right, actually.
Leave It to Beaver.
No, oh, Ben, that's a black and white show.
this is hard for me. I wasn't there.
I know.
Oh, the Mary Tyler, one of those.
Yeah.
Mary Tyler Moore show?
Mary Tyler Moore show. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then also Bewitched?
No.
I Dream of Jeannie?
Stop guessing, Ben. This is late 70s. 8 o'clock, All in the Family. 8:30, MASH. 9 o'clock, Mary Tyler Moore Show. 9:30, and this is the one you're not going to get, The Bob Newhart Show.
Oh, this I would never have heard of that.
And the last one, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, Variety Show.
Oh.
Female.
Oh.
Fucking funny ass person.
Oh. You've told me about this person before. I should know who this is. Tarzan? What? George of the Jungle?
Yeah, they always wanted her to do that. They always wanted her to do that.
I definitely don't know.
The Carol Burnett Show.
Oh, yes, yes.
Half the people listening to this are like driving off the road and rolling over and just being like, how could you not get that? That's the best show ever.
You know, people say that. I have never seen it in my entire life. Never.
Oh, Ben.
I know.
It was unbelievably fantastic. Like, everybody watched it. And then the next day, people would talk about it.
Okay, my next question is a two-parter. And the first part is actually your generation. And the second part is my generation.
Okay.
Okay. The sodomy laws in the United States, especially...
I love it already!
Yeah, we love those. The sodomy laws in the United States especially targeted sexual acts between people of the same sex. But many states even outlawed anal sex and oral sex in heterosexual couples, even married couples. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
The first state to repeal the sodomy laws did so in 1962. Which state was it?
Indiana.
Wrong.
No, Illinois.
Correct.
Illinois. It was the I state. They're right next to each other.
Yeah, they're sidled up.
Yeah, Illinois.
Very good. Illinois has been the first in many ways in terms of LGBT rights.
Thank you, Chicago.
Yeah. Okay, second part. In 2003, when the Supreme Court finally ruled that sodomy laws were unconstitutional, 14 states still had sodomy laws that they had not repealed. Name five of those 14 states.
All in the Family, MASH, Maritime World.
So the 14 states that held out as long as possible until the Supreme Court ruled they had to get rid of the sodomy laws.
Could we just say the Southern Conference? Texas.
Yes.
Louisiana.
Yes.
Mississippi.
Yes.
Alabama.
Yes.
Arkansas.
No.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. There are some weird ones in there that are sort of northern Idaho.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. Well, bye-bye sodomy laws.
Great question.
In 2003, can you believe that was in... I was entering high school, Tommy.
It's archaic.
It's unbelievable. The sodomy laws that were set up in the 1600s.
When they were doing it. Thank you.
Come on, the 1600s invented sodomy.
No, the Greeks did.
That's probably true.
This question is in the style of Jeopardy. Farrah Fawcett was the queen of this particular hairstyle.
Feather and blowout.
Please say it in the way that you're supposed to say it.
What do you say? Give me an F or something? I've never seen Jeopardy. I have no idea.
Oh my God, Ben!
Sorry.
You've never seen Jeopardy?
No. Jeopardy's the one with all the letters on the board, right?
No, it's, you know, give me hairstyles for 300. And then Alex Trebek would go, Farrah Fawcett was the queen of this particular hairstyle. And then you would go, what is?
Okay, what is a feather and blowout?
Yeah, that's good enough. That sort of sounds like
flock of seagulls.
No, what is feathering?
What is feathering?
Feathering is when it's cut in layers and you would blow dry it so it went back and it looked like your head was the side of a duck that had all these feathers.
Wow, I really showed my age on that question. I didn't even get Jeopardy.
No, you didn't even get the format.
Okay, that was embarrassing. My last one. to close my theme of firsts, Taiwan was the first country in Asia to legalize same-sex marriage. Which year did that happen?
I'm going to guess 2008.
2019.
Ah!
The first country in the entire continent of Asia to legalize same-sex marriage. And this law only permits adoption of a child genetically related to one of them.
Wow.
2019. That's so depressing.
Oh, come on, you guys.
You guys. All those Asian politicians who listen to Ask Your Gay Uncle, you guys. I just wanted to put that in there because we've got all these firsts that like celebrate things and people accomplishing things and all this stuff happening. I just wanted to remind everybody that, you know, just because those exist doesn't mean that it's not still hard in other places.
Right, right. Well, on that light note, Benjamin, we'll go to my last question. Picture yourself 1975, and Renee Richards is suing an organization. Why is she suing them? And what organization is she suing, Ben?
Okay, I need more hints. I need more hints.
Here's your hint. Renee was not born Renee. She was actually born Richard Raskind.
Oh, okay, the plot thickens.
Yes.
Okay, just tell me. I don't know.
Renee Richard sued the United States Tennis Association, and in particular, the U.S. Open, because they would not let her play.
Mm.
And she won.
Wow.
And she is my Gonti of the week.
What a segue.
It's Gunkle of the Week.
Okay, so Renee was born Richard in 1939, went off to Yale, became an ophthalmologist, was in the Navy, and something that was going on for Renee throughout that whole time period was that Renee was not happy with her gender.
Mm.
As you know, she was born Richard, and Renee even wore dresses in college. So we're talking, this is the early 60s, and people weren't doing that.
That was illegal. Right?
It was, yes, it was illegal. It was illegal the way that homosexuality was illegal. It was so looked down upon being a transsexual that it was considered a sign of insanity.
Uh-huh.
And so Renee went to Europe to get a sex change and toured around as a woman there and then decided, you know what? That's not right. I don't want to do that. And so she came back, ended up getting married to a model. And they had a child. And then in 1975, they got a divorce. And Renee said, that's it. I want to have a gender reassignment surgery. And she did. And throughout this whole time period, she'd been playing tennis and was ranked okay in the men's world, but wasn't great. And after getting her sex reassignment, went back into tennis and went to play tennis as a woman. And a sports announcer noticed that she had a left-hand serve and remembered that Richard Raskin had a powerful left-hand serve and outed her.
Oh, wow. So she was trying to play as a woman and trying to hide the fact that she used to be Richard.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I mean, I don't think many people would have been pleased that one, she had a sex change and here she was competing.
Oh, what a complicated story.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh. That must, I mean,
yeah.
That's so awful.
Yeah, well, then, the U.S. Open and the U.S. Tennis Association and the Women's Tennis Association said, okay, anyone who now plays on the female circuit, they need to have the bar test, which is basically looking at your chromosomes.
They created this test because of Renee.
That I don't know. But
that timing is pretty
specific. Yeah.
To be like, oh, this trans person wants to play, we're going to suddenly require this genetic test.
Right. And she refused to take it. Uh-huh. And so they barred her from playing. And she said, fuck you. I am going to sue you. And so she did. And in a New York court, they said, oh, you're going to win. Because you say you're a woman, you're a woman.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I totally understand both sides of this. Like, I get why her female competitors would feel like it's unfair competing against someone who used to be a man.
Right. Well, and she was 6'1". So there's some serious height competition there as well. She ended up writing a book about that very problem, Ben, about how difficult it was. And it's called Second Serve. And it talks about her trials and tribulations as being an out, transgendered woman in the U.S. tennis world.
Hmm.
She then went on to write another book, which was called No Way Renee. And that is actually one of the reasons why I really am drawn to her, because she basically says, I hurt my family. It impacted my son, who was maybe 6 or 7 at the time when she went through this lawsuit. And she said that she put all of her energy into the lawsuit and playing tennis when, in retrospect, she wished that she had given that attention to her son and that it affected him adversely.
Wow. So much humility from someone who, like, had this fire and this need to fight and is able to look back and see the downside of that.
You know, and Ben, this is tying us back to the very beginning of the show.
Oh my God.
About how things change.
You having fought in your 20s and 30s, being part of ACT UP and
bearing that torch and the mellowing you've experienced since.
Right.
That's very similar. Tommy, you are
Renee. I mean,
that's
not my fight anymore. Oh, no, no. But I did wear dresses. I totally wore dresses in high school. And the shame that is around that, oh, my gosh. I cannot tell you. And she did it anyway, and she kept going. Yeah. So that's one of the reasons why she's my Gaunty of the Week. That, you know, she was bold, and she spoke her truth, and she went public.
She fought the fight.
Yeah, she did. And here's a quote. This was, she was asked, what would you say now about suing to play as a woman?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, having lived for the past 30 years, I know if I'd had surgery at the age of 22 and then at 24 went on the tour, no genetic woman in the world would have been able to come close to me. And she ends this whole thing by saying, because of all of this, I've reconsidered my opinion.
What a delicate situation to have to be able to see all sides of, or to grow to be able to see all sides of, when you've had to experience it as the one that like had to do the fighting and advocate for yourself. How elevated of her to be able to like see how it affected her son and her other competitors as well.
Yeah, so I really respect the self-reflection that she has.
And the tenacity. I love tenacity.
And I love self-reflection. So there's a really good Gaunty for both of us, Ben.
I love tenacity. You love self-reflection. We're a gunkle team.
You started out with Gershwin, and then, I don't know, you ended up with Cole Porter.
All right, everybody. That was our first episode of 2021.
Thanks to everyone who took our survey. We're planning 2021 based off of what you all said you want more of. And if you didn't take the survey yet, you still can. It'll be up through the end of January.
Yeah. Take the survey at askyourgayuncle.com or just click the link in the description.
Bye, everybody. And Niblings, keep your heart open and stay safe.
Bye now.
Ask Your Gay Uncle is created by Tom Truss and Ben Palacios with production support by me, Jackie Anders. Album artwork by Seth Shellhouse. Theme song and musical interludes by Ben Palacios and Dan Reuter. Special thanks to Matt Marr and everyone who sent us questions. If you'd like to ask a question for Tommy and Ben to answer on the podcast, leave us a message at 512-981-7332 or email ask@askyourgayuncle.com. Find us on Facebook at Ask Your Gay Uncle Podcast. More information at askyourgayuncle.com.